The first paper is Geyer et al., Trastuzumab deruxtecan, TDXD, versus Trastuzumab amtansine, TDM1, in patients with high-risk human epidermal growth factor receptor 2-positive primary breast cancer with residual invasive disease after neoadjuvant therapy. Interim analysis of DESTINY-Breast05, this is ESMO 2025, abstract LBA1.
DESTINY-Breast05 was presented by Dr. Geyer at ESMO this year. This was a trial that looked at trastuzumab deruxtecan and compared it with a current standard of care, TDM1, in patients with HER2-positive breast cancer that had residual disease after standard neoadjuvant therapy. And this was the interim analysis of the DB05 trial. This trial enrolled patients with relatively high-risk residual disease. So patients had to have residual nodal disease or had to have presented with locally advanced disease that was inoperable at the time they initiated neoadjuvant therapy. So unlike the previous trial, which established TDM1, the Catherine study that established TDM1 as standard of care, this trial was a little bit different in terms that it enrolled high-risk patients. The trial enrolled 1,600 patients. The primary endpoint was invasive disease-free survival with several key secondary endpoints. And what we saw at ESMO this year was compared to TDM1, TDXD led to 53% reduction in the risk of invasive disease or recurrence or death. And that translated into 8.7% absolute improvement in IDFS. The IDFS at 3 years was about 84% in the control arm, which was TDM1, and a little over 92% in the TDXD arm. The side effect profile of the two drugs were what we would have expected for these two drugs. We've been using TDM1 for a very long period of time, so no surprises there. The TDXD was associated with more nausea compared to TDM1. Again, nausea is a very known side effect of TDXD. Patients were allowed to have radiation either concurrent with the therapy of either TDM1 or TDXD or sequential to have radiation first and then start the systemic therapy. And half patients chose either to take radiation with systemic therapy or take radiation before starting either one of these two ADCs. The investigators also reported rates of radiation pneumonitis, and they seem to be fairly equal between two arms, although a relatively high incidence at 27 and 29% respectively. We know that TDXD is associated with pneumonitis, and the trial had regular monitoring with CT scans to watch for pneumonitis and catch early pneumonitis. So that's obviously one risk that's unique to TDXD that we do not see with the DM1.
So any comments about clinical applicability, assuming you could access this strategy? Would you use it in all patients with residual disease or selectively?
So the trial was selective. It selected the patients with much higher clinical risk disease, so those that had nodal disease at the time of surgery or presented with inoperable T4 disease. So certainly for those patients, this, once approved, would be an option. The space of early stage HER2-positive breast cancer and how we best employ our better ADCs is evolving quite a bit, because along with DESTINY-Breast05, we also saw results of DESTINY-Breast11, which was the new adjuvant study that included TDXD in the new adjuvant setting. So the question is, should we put it even more upfront or should we apply it at the later stage after surgery? The later stage after surgery requires 14 cycles. So it's a longer exposure. The longer the exposure, the higher the risk for pneumonitis, the longer the monitoring you need with CT scans and everything else. But certainly if this were to get approved as such in these very high-risk patients, the improvement in IDFS was quite remarkable. The follow-up is still short, so we don't have mature survival data yet, but the improvement in IDFS was quite remarkable. So if it is approved, this would be an option for our patients, assuming that they don't have any underlying lung issues. I would be cautious on those patients in terms of ILD. If somebody's already had a pneumonitis or something related to taxane or some other drug in the early stage setting, then one has to be cautious.
I know in Catherine, TDM1 didn't seem to have that much of an effect in the brain. Did they look at brain mets here?
Yes, numerically, the brain as first site of metastasis, the rate was lower with TDXD compared to TDM1. So certainly that is an added advantage, where, as you pointed out, T-DM1 didn't have an added advantage over trastuzumab and pertuzumab.
I mean, when you think about it, this is exactly what you would have predicted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, based on what we've seen from metastatic disease, right? That this
everything.
That this would be superior. Yes. Yes.
Even hazard rate, very similar to second-line metastatic disease.
Yes. And the side effect profiles. Everything is as
right.
we would have predicted it to be.
Right. And then one final question. Am I correct in saying there's a trial looking at adding to catnip T-DM1?
So there is an ongoing NCTN trial led by Alliance called Compass HER2-RD that has completed accrual. So that trial compared T-DM1 to T-DM plus to catinib in patients with residual disease. It was more like a Catherine design, so enrolled all patients regardless of the initial clinical presentation or amount of residual disease. So we'll have to wait and see what that trial shows. Again, tucatinib has been brain penetration, so hopefully should make an impact there.
The next paper is by Harbeck et al., DESTINY-Breast 11, neoadjuvant trastuzumab deruxtecan, or followed by paclitaxel plus trastuzumab plus pertuzumab versus standard of care for high-risk HER2-positive early breast cancer. ESMO 2025, abstract 2910.
DESTINY-Breast 11 was initially a three-arm trial that compared T-DXd as the only neoadjuvant therapy for 8 cycles to either T-DXd for 4 cycles followed by taxane plus HP or the standard arm, which was AC followed by THP. The T-DXd alone arm was closed after an interim analysis showed that the PCR rates in that arm were not going to be superior to the control arm, which was the dose-dense AC followed by THP. So what we saw at this ESMO was the primary endpoint PCR results, and we did see results from the two arms, the T-DXd followed by THP or the standard dose-dense AC followed by THP, and both arms here have had 8 cycles of therapy. And there was about a little over 11% improvement in PCR rate with T-DXd-THP compared to dose-dense AC-THP. An improvement in PCR was noted in both patients with hormone-positive disease and hormone-negative disease. Again, these are all patients with HER2-positive disease. A higher delta of PCR improvement was seen in those with hormone-negative disease. Again, not surprising. We've seen that consistently in all trials. The delta of improvement in PCR is higher in hormone-negative disease. The EFS data is still not mature, but we do see the curve separating. Only a small proportion of events have occurred. About 10% of EFS events have occurred, so certainly very immature at this point. In terms of toxicity, again, no big surprises there. The toxicity of dose-dense AC-THP is very well established. And one thing about the study is, you know, dose-dense AC-THP is not necessarily the standard that most of us use, at least in the United States. We've all transitioned out to anthracycline-free regimens of TCHP. So if T-DXd followed by THP was compared to TCHP, perhaps the toxicity of the non-anthracycline base would have been a little bit less. But again, we can only speculate for that. The rates of pneumonitis was lower in this study because there was only 4 doses of T-DXd that patients received as opposed to DB05, which was the adjuvant study where patients received 14 doses. There was CT scan requirement for this also at baseline and I think at 6 weeks and at the end of the 4 cycles of T-DXd. There was less hematological toxicity with T-DXd compared to AC-THP, again expected if you have an AC backbone, and the nausea seemed to be a little bit more with T-DXd, even when you have the AC on the other side, again, telling us that T-DXd can be nauseating, quite nauseating for at least some patients.
Can you comment on your thoughts about this study? Again, putting aside reimbursement, are there situations where, based on this data, you think you'd like to use this strategy? And what do you think about the practical utility of this sort of two-staged approach with T-DXd followed by THP? Any problems or issues there?
So one other unique thing about the DBBREAST-11 was it enrolled higher risk patients. So patients had to have node positive disease at the time of presentation or had to have T3 or higher T stage. So again, this wouldn't be for everybody. But for those that do have high risk disease that they present with, perhaps this approach is a little bit better than employing T-DXd for everybody with residual disease because you can get by with much little exposure to T-DXd with only 4 cycles. The two phases of the treatment, the ADC phase versus, the THP phase, again, is not dissimilar to what we see with AC-THP, right? So it reduces the exposure to the ADC, and the 8 cycles of T-DXd clearly weren't adequate. So an ADC alone isn't really replacing the entire polychemotherapy. That's what I take from this, right? Perhaps a combination of two is best, especially for patients with hormone-negative disease. There was exceptional PCR rates in those with hormone negative disease. So we'll just see where they get the approvals, right? Do both of these get approved or do we have one or the other?
The next paper is Leubel et al., trastuzumab deruxtecan plus pertuzumab versus taxane and trastuzumab and pertuzumab for patients with HER2-positive advanced metastatic breast cancer. Additional analyses of DESTINY-Breast09 and key subgroups of interest. ESMO 2025, abstract LBA18. Any comments on this follow-up data from DESTINY-Breast09 looking at T-DXd plus pertuzumab versus THP as first-line metastatic therapy? We know from ASCO that we saw a benefit in terms of PFS.
I think this was reassuring to see in, a proper subset analysis. We did see some of this in the forest plots at ESCO. The PIK3CA mutant data is also very reassuring to see because if we go back to our historical trials of HP, the benefit there of HP over H alone was less profound in PIK3CA mutant tumors, and those patients with PIK3CA mutation tend to do worse. So this certainly was very reassuring to see. So yeah, now we've all had time to digest the data from ASCO from 4 or 5 months ago. And I think it's a option for patients with metastatic HER2-positive disease for first-line therapy. Is it an option for every person with metastatic disease? Perhaps not. Some patients may still want to take endocrine therapy and NHP and other types of approaches. I think the biggest question we have in our mind is, can we have an alternative method of giving this and, have some sort of an initial period where we get the best response with T-DXd and can go to some sort of maintenance, which is better for quality of life. DB09 continued T-DXd till progression. And in clinical practice, we've all seen after a year or so, this drug gets a little hard for patients to tolerate in terms of quality of life. So we hope that we have some next phase of trials that are looking at alternative approaches to induction followed by some sort of maintenance, especially now that we have Patina data also.